Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Radio Free Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. In the latest turn of events over the last few days, Kazakhstan has introduced new rules for accreditation of journalists, which includes a requirement for journalists to work with a loosely defined host when covering government events. This comes at a time when journalists are increasingly under pressure in the rest of Central Asia, where they are facing detentions, threats online, and various forms of harassment. On today's Majlis podcast, we are here to take a deeper look into some of the latest developments mounting pressure on independent media, the toll it's taking on journalists, and what all that means for the future of independent journalism in the region. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Diana Okremova, a director of Legal Media Center in Nur Sultan, Kazakhstan, Timur Toktanaliyev, Central Asia editor of Institute for War and Peace Reporting in Bishkek, Gulnoza Said, Central Asia coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists in New York, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi in Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today in this important conversation. So let's start with Kazakhstan. Diana, you are on the ground and there are so many confusions about the new amendments. Please help us to understand what does this regulation says in concrete terms.
Some months ago, our Ministry of Information introduced new rules of accreditation, and we discussed it in a site of electron government, egov.kz, and we made several statements to ministry, to our government about these rules. And the main bad points are, first was that official body can refuse in accreditation if journalists said something, for example, bad. So if journalists had defamation case, but it's just without decision of court. And it was first point. And the second point was that the rules has a moderator who have to manage the process of press conference or briefing. And he can, for example, to interrupt journalists or not allow to ask question if it not continue with the main topic. And journalists also made statements and comments and ask minister to change it. And recently, our ministry published this document and they canceled first point. But the second point about moderator who will manage the process of conference, it's now in these rules. And our journalists now, they are afraid of that in online briefing or press conference on, for example, also court processes, because court processes are also online now in Kazakhstan. A moderator can stop journalists and can interrupt and can cancel and take off them from online conference.
So the regulations that you are talking about, you know, the moderator and all these stuff, the way it stands today, is it final? Is there any further discussion is required? Okay, it's final.
Now it's official document, yes. Official document that it's published, yes.
Of course, there's a lot to talk about Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and the rest of the region, so we will get there. Just to follow up on Kazakhstan, Gulnoza, I have been reading your response to these amendments. So what I understood from your reaction is, please correct me if I'm wrong, that these amendments practically lead to censorship. Is it the way you read it?
That's a very good way to put it, yes. In short, it's an attempt to censor journalists' questions during press conferences organized at government agencies. And in our opinion, and also in opinion of journalists and press freedom advocates from Kazakhstan, whom we spoke to prior to issuing a statement calling on the Kazakh authorities to review new amendments and not to adopt them in the current form, which Diana described, we say that this practice of appointing a host will probably, very likely, lead to limiting journalists' questions, limiting them to, it already limits them to ask questions only on certain topics, which means journalists will not be allowed to ask about any other issues that are important at that moment for the Kazakhstan society. And that's definitely a form of censorship.
Okay. Bruce, what stands out to you in all this?
Well, you know, the thing, certainly having someone, you know, if you're an accredited journalist and you come in and having someone with you that the government appoints or that's given to you, you know, I mean, that just sounds so much like Turkmenistan. That's amazing. Remember when they had the Asian indoor and martial arts games? That was the deal. They let all kinds of journalists in, but you had effectively a minder. I mean, they called him a guide or something like that, but there was someone with you all the time to make sure you didn't go places the government didn't want you to go, you know, and also clearly to report on what you were doing and who you were with and who you spoke with and everything like that. So when I saw that, I was, you know, it just kind of sent shivers down my spine. I'm like, oh my God, you know, this is like one of taking an example from the worst country in Central Asia. It so limits anything you could possibly do out there as a journalist.
Interesting. Okay, let's move on. On Kyrgyzstan, Timur, such an interesting trend. Like when one country does something questionable, strange, the neighbor immediately follows the course. In some ways, Central Asian authorities are very coordinated, especially when it comes to steps like this. In the latest trouble from your country, Kyrgyzstan, is the attack by the online troll farms. One of the victims is apparently an investigative journalist, Ali Toktokhanov. What's going on with him? Do you have any further information as to current states of those attacks?
Mohammed, I'm very sorry. Since I arrived to Bishkek just today, I haven't heard about this news yet, so I can't comment on Ali Toktokhanov. I generally can say about what we are feeling on media freedom since a new president come, new signs. I can share my opinion on general atmosphere.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, currently we are feeling that actually new authorities, Sadır Japarov and his team, they are not a big friend of independent journalists. They do not actually ready to guarantee freedom of speech. Even though Sadır Japarov in his interview to RFRL's Kyrgyz service said that he guarantees to journalists to work freely, independently, and so on. But generally, it seems that new authorities in Kyrgyzstan are not so interested in such ideas, in such.
Timur, can you be a little bit concrete as to what you mean? Have you seen any new steps that they might have taken which makes you believe that this is the case?
Well, hopefully we haven't seen some concrete steps, But for example, in 2010, when there was revolution in Kyrgyzstan, new authorities, one of their promises was to establish public TV, real public broadcasting corporation in Kyrgyzstan, freedom of speech, and so on, right? Now, these new authorities actually didn't mention anything about reforms of government television, of government media institutions. And now we see that all these government media actually they switched from old authorities to new politicians. I mean to new authorities, and they are just praising, they are publishing positive materials, articles on their moves. And at the same time, we see that Sadır Japarov and other pro-government politicians, they are criticizing independent media, independent journalists who are critically looking to different decisions, to different movements of these new authorities, new politicians. And so there is a big question if after a few months when these new politicians came to power, actually not so friendly to independent media, to independent journalists, to critical journalism, what will be consequences after 1 year, 2 year, when these old politicians, when new authority will be much more stronger? And you actually before in your question mentioned about trolls, about group of people who are attacking to independent journalists, independent media. Yes, now in Kyrgyzstan in 2020, in 2021, we are facing new level of this confrontation when politicians, when government organizations, authorities, they are creating such a group of internet users, some media experts. Media experts who are involved by contract. Yeah, and all of them are working and spending their energy to discredit independent media, work of independent journalists. Even some independent media are publishing objectively good investigations, good critical articles, for example, on corruption, on violating of human rights, and so on and so forth. We are seeing that all these trolls and different pro-governmental media, they are attacking in social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, saying that this is fake news, this is not true, you are not a quality journalist, everything is okay, and we have to support new authorities. And all these signs, I think, not so good.
Very interesting. Have you been victim of such attack, Timur, because of your own reporting?
Our new media outlet haven't been anyhow attacked. Yeah, but well, we are mostly making analytical articles, so we are not on this front line with our local colleagues. All these harsh attacks, first of all, focused for local media, for local broadcasters, for local independent journalists who are actually having number of audience inside the country, our media outlet working for Central Asia and for the Western countries. We are not on the focus of these trolls, but who knows?
Okay, fingers crossed for you, Timur. Gulnoza, the case of Toktukhanov. So what's latest about him? I've seen your reaction about him being the victim of these online trolls. So what's going on with him? Do you have any updates?
Yes, actually, his situation is quite precarious, and we have serious concerns about his life and well-being. So the threats are not limited to online threats only, and not only just to attacks of trolls and from these fake social media accounts. But in our practice, in the practice of the Committee to Protect Journalists, very often online threats turn into physical threats. Ali Toktukhanov is one of the investigative journalists who was previously with Radio Azatik, which is the Kyrgyz language service of your organization, and now he has his own media outlet called Media Hub, which is also about investigative journalism. And he was involved in the investigative reporting project that lasted for many months. And it was done by Radio Azatik as well as KLOP, which is a local media outlet, and OCCRP. And it was one of the best investigative reportings on Kyrgyzstan ever, I would say, you know, ever since the country became independent. Because it was the reporting about very high-level corruption that involved a lot of officials in Kyrgyzstan, and also these financial schemes that involved other countries. And a whistleblower who was sharing information with journalists was murdered in another country. So this is one of the most dangerous investigative projects. And we are very concerned about Ali Toktukhanov because he wants to continue his work. He wants to continue investigating. And I would like to add that the state of investigative journalism shows the state of press freedom and journalism in a country. And Kyrgyzstan is probably one of the most advanced in that sense, because there have been investigative projects. And as I said, this is one of the biggest. And I think journalists who were involved in these projects should be commended for their work, because it's very brave to investigate official corruption, especially in Kyrgyzstan, where there have been so many political changes and the system is not stable yet. I think in recent years, we've seen the press freedom in Kyrgyzstan shrinking. And despite that, there have been these investigations. And that's why we should try to support journalists who work on corruption, among other issues. And as I said, you know, Ali Toktakunov's situation is not that great. I wouldn't like to share more details here. But first of all, I hope nothing bad happens to him. But also, I think the Kyrgyz authorities should pay attention to this and should provide him with security and ensure his security so he can continue his work without any attacks online or offline.
Right. This story sounds very, very familiar. We have had participants from Kyrgyzstan and journalists would share similar horrific stories that you are talking about that Dr. Konev is going through at the moment. Gulnoza, also, Uzbekistan, the country where you originally come from, harassment of journalists became one of the frequent occurrences there after brief liberalization, I should say. And one of the latest cases is blogger Oktabek Satori. So who was detained in February of this year. So any new development about him?
We're in touch with his family, and interestingly, it was very difficult for Otabek and his family to find a lawyer because even lawyers are scared. So we continue monitoring his case. We continue staying in touch with his family, and we already, as you mentioned, issued a statement calling on the Uzbek authorities to drop the charges, to release Otabek Satori and allow him to continue working. He's one of the journalists who is not from the capital, Tashkent, where I think there is a bit more freedom for independent reporting and blogging, but he is from the western part of the country where we've seen several incidents of harassment of journalists and even one very inconclusive killing of a journalist. I'm saying inconclusive because we couldn't really conclude with certainty that he was indeed killed for his journalism. But all this happened while Shavkat Mirziyoyev is president of Uzbekistan. Mm. And this year is very important because this is an election year in Uzbekistan. And obviously, we are paying very close attention to Uzbekistan, to everything that's going on with bloggers and with journalists. And this case of Otabek Satori doesn't show Uzbekistan from, we say in Uzbek, from the good side. So Uzbekistan, the Uzbek authorities have been trying very hard to create this positive image in the international arena ever since Mirziyoyev came to power. He wants to present himself as a more open-minded, liberal-minded, and more democratic leader. Yeah. But whenever a journalist is prosecuted for their reporting, that's a big stain on the reputation of the country. And I hope that Mirziyoyev himself and other Uzbek government officials will understand that and will try to wash this stain by releasing Satori from jail.
Right. And also, Gulnoza, in Satori's case is not the single step that Uzbek authorities have taken with regards to independent media in Uzbekistan. I think earlier, I should say late last year, there was a surprise move by the Uzbek parliament in which they adopted a regulation which would criminalize the dissemination of information which authorities in Uzbekistan would categorize as false. Anything came out of that move?
Yeah, it was adopted and there are huge fines. And I think it's good you mentioned it because we see that regressive step in quite a number of countries when they try to punish so-called fake news. And Uzbekistan has become one of them. And also in terms of decriminalizing defamation, they've been, you know, the Uzbek authorities have been talking about it. And also they understand that this is the step that's required to become more liberal and more democratic, to decriminalize defamation. And this issue has been raised by CPJ. This issue has been raised by a number of other organizations in different forums, including the UN during UPR. So they know they should do that. But unfortunately, the step is not complete. And I can say the same thing about Kazakhstan, although Kazakhstan is a bit more progressive in its decriminalization, quote unquote, of defamation. But speaking about Uzbekistan, again, you know, very often I think of Uzbekistan as a country that puts a step forward, but then goes two steps back, you know, because they seem to understand the necessity to liberalize different areas, including media, but then they are too scared of independent voices. And that's such a wrong practice. And one thing I wanted to mention is that the changes or the reforms, whenever they are cosmetic, we organizations that are not based in Uzbekistan and also foreign governments, we see all that. We understand that. So it's not like, you know, by making some cosmetic changes, superficial changes, and giving good quote unquote speeches, you can improve the image. The image can be improved by very concrete steps aimed at liberalizing media environment.
Right. Yeah, we really need to move on. Bruce, it's not really about the press per se, but it was interesting to see what went on last week, I guess, in the gathering of activists in Uzbekistan, where they planned to speak about forming an independent political party. It certainly speaks a lot about the boundaries of freedom of expression, I guess. So you had an insightful story about it. Would you like to tell in a couple of words about what went on there?
Well, you know, actually, I can put two things together. I have another story coming out today. It's a similar case. But yeah, you know, there's this party that's trying to be formed in Uzbekistan. This man was a professor and the rector, actually, of Termez University. He's trying to form a party, the Truth and Progress Party, it would translate to. And Mirziyoyev has even said that he's not against opposition parties as long as they're homegrown opposition parties. People that have lived in Uzbekistan for a long time, I believe he used the term, people who have eaten the bread and drank the water of this country, you know, regularly. So, but the usual kind of obstacles come up. Hard to find a place to meet, harassed when you do finally get a place, you know, when you do finally meet, you know, and then the harassment that comes after that. And there's, I said there was another story because just recently there's an independent trade union that's also down south. Well, in a couple places. And so they're trying to represent the interests of agricultural laborers, people in the cotton industry that work for this company called Indorama Agro. And so they also had, finally, they wanted to form an independent trade union. And the government has signaled, you know, that it's not against these kind of things, at least verbally. And they also had problems finding a place to meet. And as soon as they did meet and establish this independent trade union, the first in Uzbekistan in all the years of independence, you know, immediately they started getting harassed. And, you know, officials warned them they better stop, you know, called individual people and told them not to pursue this any further and get out of the organization, put obstacles in the way of the organization progressing to get registration. So it would be the same if you were a truly independent media outlet in Uzbekistan. Right. There's a lot of good journalists out there that are really trying and pushing the limits. But as far as establishing an independent media outlet that would broadcast or write about or disseminate critical information about the government, you'd have, you know, so many problems that it'd just be impossible. And chances are that the people that were involved with it in organizing it would find themselves in a lot of trouble.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's sometime you feel... I don't like to use the press, but it's just such a challenging job to be a journalist in Central Asia. So we spoke about Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and Kazakhstan. Bruce, would you also like to say a couple of words about the situation in Turkmenistan and Tajikistan? Anything to be said in this context?
Turkmenistan is obviously just the worst, rock bottom. There is no other media. I mean, we have some stringers out there and Iranian news agencies, and even Azerbaijani news agencies sometimes can get people out there in China and stuff, but I mean, they're really confined to what they can report. Not our correspondents, but there's no other media registered in the country. And if you report critical things about the government, and I think we're the only ones there that do, although a lot of outside organizations do, then of course they're not only trying to block you from getting your information into the country, but they're trying to locate your sources for information inside the country and do what they can to neutralize them and keep them quiet. Tajikistan has gone kind of down that same route. There are, you know, we're still allowed to do work there, and there's one other news media outlet that I can think of that still works there that's independent too. But, you know, access to places is tough. Accreditation, you know, and we were talking about that with Kazakhstan. It's very difficult to get accreditation in Tajikistan for us, for instance, for Azadi, Radio Azadi, our Tajik service. You know, the government will, after lots of complaints, the government has grudgingly given them accreditation that only lasts, in some cases, for several weeks, but usually no more than a few months, which means they have to come back and do it again, withhold hold accreditation from people sometimes for weeks, so technically they're not allowed to work as a journalist there. Like I said, they've concentrated as much of the news, the dissemination of the news, into the hands of state media as they possibly can. And they try to keep everybody else out.
I guess recently Asia Plus was in trouble, I guess. I don't exactly remember what type of situation they were faced in. Gulnoz, do you remember anything? I mean, what was the particular situation that they were faced in?
Yeah, the website of Asia Plus is blocked on and off, and also we hear incidents about the relatives of journalists who live in exile in foreign countries being harassed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes law enforcement officers come to visit the relatives of a journalist who lives abroad and interrogate them, or right. sometimes simply harassed by asking different questions, but the questions are about the journalist and their job, and the purpose of that is to sow fear among those people. So the relatives then ask a journalist to stop reporting critically about the Tajik authorities. And journalism in general has become a very difficult and risky profession in right. Tajikistan. I remember some 20 years ago, if we were asked to do a sort of rating, which I usually don't like doing, rating or ranking of media freedom in countries in Central Asia, I would put Turkmenistan as the least free, but then, you know, Tajikistan will not be in the second place. But now I can say with a lot of confidence that Tajikistan in recent years has moved in the direction where Turkmenistan stands and has become very, very restrictive for journalists.
Yeah, very, very sad to see that. And again, these two countries are increasingly following each other's steps, like the type of method of harassments that you are talking about, Gulnoz, about Tajikistan, in which like authorities would send people outside to harass to journalists who might be independently trying to work but based outside of the country. We have been seeing this similar trend initiated by the Turkmen authorities. I mean, in their case, they would even go after those who might have left comments which are critical about the authorities. You know, we have seen numerous examples among the Turkmen migrant workers in Turkey. We have spoken a lot about the rest of the countries. Let me also ask one more question before we move on. Diana, the types of challenges that we have been talking about in the rest of Central Asia in terms of the online harassment and the detentions and the things like that, any of them sound similar to you in Kazakhstan when you look into the day-to-day lives of journalists there? I mean, you are working as part of the NGO which provides legal help to independent media there. I mean, what kind of cases you have been recently involved in the context of independent media in Kazakhstan?
I think that the most important problem last year in Kazakhstan in the time of pandemic, it was access to information. Situation with access to information is really terrible, because our official bodies, they refused information, they refused to disclose very important information, and they make it secret. And journalists, it complains all the time, they cannot get necessary information, of course. And sometimes we have lawsuits of defamation. Sometimes, and last time it's very popular, we have many cases of blocking sites. It's not journalist sites, but sometimes it's political sites and internet resources. And we cannot understand why it's blocking, because in Kazakhstan we have some difficult procedures which allow our government to block sites. And I think we have now in Kazakhstan, we have three main problems which cannot develop freedom of speech, for example. First, it's state funding of mass media, because almost all mass media in Kazakhstan, they sponsored by government, and the sums every year are huge. The second problem, it's a strict legislation. Because journalists are not independent, of course, because they have many threats all the time. And now our Ministry of Digital Development, they published also a draft of law about protection of personal data. And now we are going to make open statement about this amendment to law, because according to this draft, you cannot gather any information about a person without his permission. And right. It's very strange. And the main problem is we have no political intention of our president and government to change something. And it's very sad.
You know, Nazarbayev stepping aside from the active position as a president didn't help, I guess, to improve the situation there. And some people even would say that after change of the government, things just got only worse in many ways. Anyway, so let's move on. So what all these really mean? How should we make sense of it? And what the future holds as many eventful days are in the pipelines in Central Asia? Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Diana Ukremova, Director of Legal Media Center in Nur-Sultan, Timur Toktanaliyev, Central Asia Editor at Institute for War and Peace Reporting in Bishkek, Gulnoza Said, Central Asia Coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists in New York, Bruce Panier, the Editor of Radio Free Radio Liberty, Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Owozi in Prague. And I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Radio Liberty's Media Manager here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing a new wave of mounting pressure on independent media in Central Asia. And I know we don't have much time to talk in details about some of the other points that I had in mind, but let's try to cover that quickly and briefly. So again, let me start with you, Gulnoza. Why are we seeing all these mounting pressures? I mean, what's your take on why this is happening? Any special development that might be causing this or prompting the authorities to take these steps?
Well, five countries of Central Asia differ from each other. So there are a lot of reasons, internal reasons, and they may not necessarily be the same in neighboring countries. But I think the overall reason is the intention and attempt of the authorities to control free flow of information and to impose the narrative they want on people. And they don't want any other narratives. They don't want any independent opinions. That's the main reason. And I don't think we will see any big changes when governments will allow independent media, allow critical voices to sound louder. I don't believe we are going to see that in the next few years. I think in some countries, they will try, like in Kazakhstan or in Uzbekistan, they will try to continue the cosmetic changes to improve the image of their countries for the foreign consumption, so to speak. And also one trend I foresee is the increase in SLAPs. SLAP is an acronym for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. It's basically a lawsuit when a public official or someone else can drag a media outlet or a journalist to courts, and even if they don't hope to win the case, they, by having these very lengthy trials and hearings, law cases, they can drain the finances of a media outlet. We see that in some other countries where defamation is not criminalized. For example, recently I spoke to an editor of Gazeta Wyborcza, one of the biggest dailies in Poland, and they are facing like 60 lawsuits at the moment. So when we already see those cases in Kazakhstan, and we're likely to see cases like that in other countries. Turkmenistan is very unlikely to become freer, and Tajikistan will move on cementing the authoritarian regime of the current president or his son, if his son is elected, quote-unquote, in the future.
Yeah, you just nailed it down, Gulnoza. Sometimes we, among the Central Asia watchers, we think that the current governments are so bad that anyone replaces them cannot be worse than them. But, you know, changes in Central Asia have shown us again and again that the newcomers are also not better than what the country previously had. It's not to say that the current system should persist. I guess it is just the reality of our region. Bruce, as we quickly moving on towards the conclusion of the discussion, let me also bring you in here. So in terms of the timing, and when I say the timing, what worries me is the way Russian authorities are treating media these days. And Russia has always been the negative source of inspiration for the region. And recently, one Kyrgyz parliamentarian is heard flouting the idea of foreign agent law, the type of which we have seen in Russia. So I don't know what came out of that. I mean, in terms of timing, what do you see happening here?
Well, I don't want to totally dispossess the Central Asians of their own agency with this. I mean, I'll answer for them first. When times are hard in Central Asia, the government cracks down on the media practically every single time. Now, the pandemic, of course, it opened the door for these governments in a lot of ways. They were able to impose new laws on what they call fake news, right? Well, this is a very loose term. Now, what they said it was aimed at is preventing people from spreading fear and panic about the pandemic. But it conveniently can be used for a lot of other purposes there. You know, ahead of elections, in Uzbekistan's case, well ahead of elections, you start grooming the process. You can't harass the media and shut them down in the last few weeks before elections. So you have to go at this well in advance to get everything set up so that when people start to pay attention, when it's only a couple weeks till your presidential or parliamentary elections and people are paying more attention, they don't see this. It's already happened. You know, the harassment of the media and like I said, it's in one way or another giving them the message of where the limits are in their reporting in the coming days. Now, certainly in the case of Russia, yes, it's easier for the Central Asian governments to do something like passing in Kyrgyzstan, to say they do pass the law on foreign agents or something, because they know that they're going to have the support of Russia when they do it, right? So they're going to take a lot of flack from the West. And maybe some other people about, you know, why are you doing this repressive law? But they know at the end of the day, they can turn to Moscow and Moscow, so they don't listen to them. You know, we're one of your trade, if not your leading trade partner, one of your leading trade partners. We're your ultimate guarantor of security in the region. We're a longtime friend of yours. Mm-hmm. Let the West go ahead and criticize all they want. We're not going anywhere. Well, we think you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's very well-placed argument, Bruce. Thank you very much for that. So on the same note, also let me get Timur, your point here. So we often talk about the situation of media freedom once something happens, like, you know, the legal amendment in Kazakhstan has prompted us to get back to this topic in this episode. Then something else happens, you know, we move on until authorities take their next outrageous step, I guess. So as a result, again, you must be feeling this even more than we feel. I feel that the independent media is increasingly squeezed throughout the region. Look at where earlier Gulnoza was talking about. Look at where things have come, you know, in Tajikistan. I mean, Turkmenistan used to be just a single outlier in Central Asia. Now Tajikistan has joined the club. And look at your own country, Kyrgyzstan, where things have come and the worries that you have about the future, where things might go after this stage. And I was hopeful about Uzbekistan, but 4 years on since Mirziyoyev is in power, I'm really not excited, to put it simply. So what I'm trying to say, Timur, is what's your reading of the region and scenarios where it is headed in the context of media freedom?
If we talk about near coming future, I think there is no actually positive analysis for each country, because we see that actually governments and frankly saying politicians as well, they're not understanding the truly role of independent media or freedom of speech in developing the society, the state. Even in Kyrgyzstan, I think we will face all these new challenges from a new government. And of course, but I think all these challenges are not new for independent media. We all actually living in such conditions for 30 years. So I think we will figure out how to live with the new challenges, how to solve all these new challenges in each country and including Kyrgyzstan. But there is a new thing as well, especially in Kyrgyzstan. We are talking also that, we have some restrictions from government, some pressure, but at the same time, we are seeing that challenges are coming from different side, from a social media, from bloggers. When one blogger, he has audience of dozens or thousands of followers, and one blogger, he is becoming one media, And sometimes people think that they don't need to read independent media, they don't need to read truly journalism. There is enough to listen to some bloggers, and that will be enough. And some advertisements, business companies, they are going to these bloggers and giving money for advertisements. They're supporting financially, and at the same time, this supporting is shrinking from the independent media. Yes, and independent journalists, independent media, they are facing such kind of challenges as well. And it's also actually pressing for developing independent journalism, because idea is a good thing, yeah, but you have to pay for journalists, you have to pay to some expenses for website, for office, and so on and so forth. Yeah? And all this requires money, and independent media, they are actually relying for advertisements from business and some a little amount from grants, yeah. And these new challenges are coming also from bloggers, from social media, and it's also a new question how to build sustainable independent media in Central Asian countries, in Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah, you are talking about these financial constraints. I mean, that's very legitimate point to raise, Timur. And also, that's one more element that we have to deal with in the list of challenges which already exist in Central Asia that bothers independent journalism there. So other elements that we have been talking about, Timur, I mean, as a Central Asia editor, I'm sure you guys work with journalists across the region. So how these challenges affect on your own journalists?
Of course, these challenges affect negatively, especially for new coming journalists. Okay, we have experienced journalists who are very actually experienced by different pressures, and they actually have made their internal decision to be a truly journalist, and they are ready to face different challenges, but for new generation of journalists, for these young journalists, it's a big question and it's a big challenge, and we see that sometimes actually new journalists, these young journalists are not ready to face such kind of challenges. They don't want to have any problem with government, with these trollers and so on, and they are saying, I don't want to prepare such critical article. I want to cover some other issue like culture, sport, and so on, So from this point of view, we also actually seeing this problem with new journalists, because, well, time is going, all journalists are going to pension, I don't know, abroad, and we have to have a new generation of journalists, and this pressure, this challenges are not so positively affecting to raising new generation.
Yeah, we are way out of time. We need to really quickly wrap up the discussion. So I will ask two more points, Diana and Gulnoza. So Diana, as we have been talking about, it's just not Kazakhstan, throughout the region, the list of challenges are growing. This is in addition to tough situation in which Central Asian independent journalists have been already working and already have been facing. So how to stop this negative trajectory? You are on the ground trying to help those independent media organizations, journalists. What kind of help you need?
First, I don't agree with Timur about new generation, because we have in Kazakhstan last year very interesting and brave projects of young journalists. For example, Holland Youth, Protinge, Massa Media. And it's young people, really young people, journalists who want to cover dangerous topics, and they want to be at the top of any news, and they don't afraid doing it. And I think it's very good trend.
No, it's encouraging,
And about what we need and what we can do. Of course, I think that nothing seriously will change next year in our countries. But what I can do, and organization who defend journalists can do, and journalists can do, to collaborate journalist community first, and to let them know that they can be force and they can change something. To continue our activity, to make open statements, to sue with government, and to make very loud and publicly cry for all the world that what is happening in our countries.
Mm-hmm.
What help we need? I think support of international organizations, of course, support of journalists from other countries.
Gulnoza, final point. I mean, that one of the things that Diana ended up talking about is these public positions that international community needs to take when there is someone in trouble. You know, this public shaming, and it's useful in some places, but not everywhere. So from your perspective, is there anything the international community can do to help Central Asian journalists, independent journalists, so that they can navigate these mounting challenges? I mean, what can be done about that?
Well, if you consider CPJ as part of that very vague term of international community, yes, we are doing, you know, naming and shaming, reaching out to authorities on every single incident by issuing statements, by writing letters. Sometimes, you know, they respond. Most of the time, they don't respond.
Is there anything and, more than that we should be doing?
Of course, there are two issues here. First of all, the political weight of every single Central Asian country in the world community. It's not that much, honestly. So there is not a huge attention paid to any of the Central Asian countries by, let's say, the US administration or by the EU institutions and so on. But we work with those parties, as well as other organizations like the OSCE, to not only raise the awareness about press freedom violations, but also try to find those countries and governments and organizations that have leverage and can put pressure on the governments in Central Asia. There are not so many, but we obviously continue working on it. And I also was very happy to hear what Diana said about younger generation joining the profession. This is a really great thing to hear, and I wanted to also just praise all journalists in all five Central Asian countries for continuing working and staying in the profession and reporting independently and critically on important issues despite all the risks and threats. You're doing a great job.
I think we should
Mohammed,
have...
I'm sorry. May I shortly just add,
sure.
Especially when Diana said about new generation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I'm saying about it from our experience.
Right.
We are IWPR Khabar Asia. We are teaching and training and making reports through all the Central Asian countries. Yeah. Of course, we have some people from new generation in each country who are making best journalism practice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But if we are generally looking, and especially when we are speaking about investigative journalism, we are facing a lot of big problems, and we are here in Khabar Asia, we have a lot of cases, that actually young journalists who are came to the profession there, they are not ready to make investigations, to face different challenges when it comes to investigate different violation of law, corruption, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
Yeah, but more experienced journalists, somehow they are actually somehow ready to make these investigations. Yeah, because in Kyrgyzstan we have some kind of freedom of speech. Here, some young journalists are still ready to experiment. Yeah, but when it comes to Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan about investigative journalism, we actually failed with experimenting with new generation of journalists.
No, it is tough. It's tough. I can totally understand what you are trying to say. I mean, as a former director of the Turkmen Service, we know, you know, exactly what you are talking about. I mean, it's tough. I mean, as Gulnoza said before, we are not talking about the reporting, actual hard-hitting reports. Even if you leave a critical comment and you are based outside of your country, still you are followed, still you are approached by the authorities, and you are threatened, and your family members back home are threatened. It's a tough job. And these new challenges just add a new element into already existing challenges. It's a tough job. I didn't want this discussion to end with such a pessimistic note, but the one thing that excites me is also about that it's increasingly becoming difficult for authorities to control the media landscape because of all these social media platforms and the smart ways that people find out how to access into those platforms and express their opinion. That's something encouraging. Bruce, any final word you would like to say? Otherwise, I'm going to end the conversation here.
I mean, just to echo some of the comments that Gulnaza had, that, you know, I definitely tip my hat to all the people that are willing to do this and keep doing it, because the environment's getting tougher. There's no doubt about it. You know, I mean, I certainly understood what Tim Moore said about some people being discouraged. I mean, it's rough when you're starting a job to have people say that you're a liar and you're doing fake news and threaten you, you know, and stuff. You know, and of course, it's true for everybody that's doing it. But if you're just starting out, that's got to wear on you a little bit, I'm thinking. So I don't see it getting better anytime in the near future, because none of the situation, the socioeconomic situation in these countries doesn't appear to be set to get better anytime in the future. So sadly, there's more of this to come, I'm sure.
I'm sure we will keep our eyes on this. Here we have to unfortunately conclude the conversation. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlog Owazi. Also, big thanks goes to Diana Okremova, director of Legal Media Center. Diana was joining us from Kazakhstan. Timur Tuktunaliyev, Central Asia editor at Institute for War and Peace Reporting, who was joining us from Bishkek today. Gulnaza Said, Central Asia coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.